Hey, listeners, have you missed us? Did you think we went off the air?
And our salutations and welcome to Imbibe Cinema. I'm Jonathan C. Leggett along with my co-hosts
Michael Nguyen's,
Trisha Leggett.
And in this episode, we're going to be discussing Scott Burns's The Report, currently available on Prime Video, while imbibing the Senator cocktail. The recipe can be found as well as pictures on our website, which is imbibecinema.com. The Imbibe Cinema Podcast is brought to you by the Blue Whiskey Independent Film Festival, otherwise known as BWIF. Our festival seeks independent, character-driven films of all lengths, styles, and genres. To learn more, please visit us at BWIF.com. Once again, that is BWIFF.com.
.com.
It's .net.
We will note try. To self, purchase .net.
Ooh, total side note.
Before this episode.
Fun fact. Did you know Cyber Monday is 14 years old? Yeah. And the fact that Cyber Monday 14 years ago is probably the time they stopped using the word cyber when talking about the internet.
It is true. It is a little weird that it's still called Cyber Monday. Also because the deals start like on Black Friday.
They don't even start on
November,
Black Friday, November 1st.
It's true. It's like, and now that Halloween's done.
And even then, I was in the Home Depot.
Cyber November.
Like 3 days before Halloween, actually. No, it was the week before Halloween.
And,
they'd already moved the Halloween stuff to like one corner of the front and everything was Christmas. And I'm like, seriously, guys?
Same thing with Costco. They're like, screw this, next holiday.
To which, of course, the turkeys are just being like, fuck you guys. We're next, assholes.
Yeah.
We go in. Never mind.
Right, because it's no less politically correct than any of the other holidays.
Speaking of politically correct.
Do that holiday.
So I think that we can possibly do our best to not get too political over this film. But I found that even knowing what the result of this film was, that I was still on the edge of my seat leading up to the end. This actually did a great job of building the suspense.
Kind of like Apollo 13, when I knew nothing about history, was like, they're going to die. And I went, oh no, they didn't. Historical fun fact.
Were you also confused by the end of the Titanic?
No, I knew that one.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I knew either one. So I remember
hashtag millennials.
He was little.
I remember when I went to go see. Well, I still remember this in the Daily Herald. There's this breakdown of like the picks, the passables, and the pits is the breakdown of like movies.
Okay. Yep.
And it was, you know, the picks are like 3 to 4 stars, and you know, passables are in the middle, and then there's the terrible movies.
Okay.
Anyway, in there it would explain what kind of movie it was too, and they had misprinted Apollo 13 is a documentary. And I remember not knowing what a documentary was at that point.
Oh, so you wanted to start making docs like immediately.
Well, I asked, what is that? And then my mom was like, that's not right. That's a misprint because that's not a documentary. But anyway, so this ensued. I think Heather was in the room, or it may have been you, but I want to say
we look a lot alike.
Trisha and my sister Heather was in the room, and I want to say it was her that said, oh yeah, they all died.
It's probably me.
And I was like,
Jesus,
oh my God. And so the entire movie I was
waiting for them to all die.
So when they didn't, spoiler for anybody, I guess, who hasn't seen the movie or was born
too late.
Do you think she was thinking of Challenger?
No, I think I was messing with.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure.
If it wasn't Heather, I totally would have done that.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are so. So anyway, I really think we should talk about the story
of this film.
Yes, of this film.
Oh, all right.
Fine.
So, Adam Driver plays Daniel Jones, and the fact that this is historically
Well, it's based.
Probably, dramatized. It's based on
It's based on actual events.
Yeah.
Right. The way that they put it. There are certain things that I thought would have been, that were dramatized. When I'm watching and I'm like, all right, the CIA, of course, breaks into the room. But evidently they did that.
Yeah.
Which is just, I'm sorry, if you're the CIA, isn't there a better way of doing that? Like a more subtle, like, you know, I'm not saying like there's a way where you could get Tom Cruise to like lower himself in from the ceiling, but you'd think it'd be more spy-like than, hey, everybody, let's just open the door and walk in. It just seems tacky.
They like took the drive or whatever and then bursted into the film, into the movie, into the, what am I saying? What is this?
It's a really
drink?
Good drink. Yeah. It's a good drink.
Yeah. The CIA is doing everything they can to keep it going because they know that if it's not actionable intelligence that they're getting, that they are breaking like Geneva Conventions and all sorts of shit. So they have to keep playing it up that it is working when it's not.
Mm-mm. Which, you know, is not unique to the CIA. If you think about anybody who works at any company ever, whenever you have this big policy that's been a lot of money and a lot of hype to put it in, and then it, like, doesn't work, everybody, like, just doubles down on it because they don't want to admit something doesn't work. That's universal. Whether you're at the CIA or McDonald's. It's just, it's
I think there's a fairly different thing between, like, waterboarding some random person or putting a chicken nugget in a deep fryer. But, you know, that might just be me.
All right. I didn't mean to trivialize it. I meant to humanize it.
Well, and the humanized part
with chicken
is,
nuggets.
You know, I guess the big message is very basic in like even just an individual's journey.
Mm-hmm.
You take, you know, the reaction, the overall reaction to 9/11 is anger and
helplessness.
Right. And
fear.
So you have a number of individuals who all reacted with emotion instead of.
Well, and they call out that they know that if it happens again, the CIA are on the chopping block.
Well,
they're
another,
the ones who will go down for it happening again.
Right.
So they have to figure out how to prevent it.
And
they just go too far.
There are two things I found very interesting about this in the film. And the first is when, I think it's Cheney, I can't remember who it is that they have on television in the background right after 9/11,
mm-hmm.
where they're talking and they're talking about all the actionable information they had. We told you, we told you, we told you. And they didn't do anything. And so you have this moment where the CIA is like, no, we told you. And maybe not to this extent, but we told you. And then I had heard also outside of the film that there was so much information that had been, it was like a needle in a haystack finding the right stuff and knowing what was actionable and what wasn't.
Well, and also my understanding too is the infighting between the FBI and the CIA created massive problem, a massive internal issue, which is what?
Prior to. Oh, territorial thing.
Yeah, turf war, for sure.
Which is interesting, because you think of those groups, you would think the CIA and the FBI having a turf war, and the NSA is just like hanging out, eating popcorn, like not there.
Listening
to everybody.
Yeah.
Like,
just chilling. But backtracking. So the head of the meeting they have, and then he says, you know, I've talked with him from the White House, and there's going to be no change in anything. I think it's very interesting because normally, like, with anything going wrong anywhere, people will be like, your head is on a block,
right.
Or we are changing management.
Yeah.
And here they were like, no, we're not going to look back. We're not going to point fingers. We're not going to assign blame. We're going to move forward. And I thought, what a grown-up, like, moment. And then it's followed by no other grown-up moment by the government.
No other grown-up moment. And then the thing that, of course, got me is when they're, you know, splashing the what has happened since, you know, the whole release of it. No one in the CIA was fired. No one was reprimanded. No one was...
Some people were promoted.
Some people were promoted.
Which is horrific.
Mm-hmm. That's where you're like, oh, well, you went from grown-up moments to...
But then, speaking of grown-up moments, another, because this is a very dark, heavy film, and it deals with such terrible material, right? I mean, as in horrifying, right? And the beginning where he first meets John Hamm's character, who is the future National chief Security? Of staff. Yeah, he's the future chief of staff of Obama.
John Hamm is Dennis McDonough.
And so he talks about how he started out being a teacher. And John Hamm's like, oh, so you work well with children. That'll become one handy on the Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in just joking about how you're dealing with a bunch of children running the country, right? When we make jokes about that because they don't play nice together, mm-hmm. right? And then you have this moment with the snow globe, which I thought was kind of sweet, that he comes mm-hmm. in and he's like a kid. He's got his backpack and he's looking at the DC stuff and he's got his little snow globe and it's kind of that...
innocence.
It's that Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. It's that Frank Capra-esque kind of feel. Mm-hmm. And then the snow globe is just left behind.
Yeah.
With the trash, kind of. And it's like, and this is the loss of it. This is where it starts.
I do think one thing that made me especially happy about this film is that at the same time, obviously with Dianne Feinstein the one who's leading this and the fact that it's mostly Democrats that Dan is working with, they do a very good job of not necessarily padding the Democrats on the back and going, good job, you guys did everything right, because they do talk about how the Obama administration, failed in this or that they, because of killing Osama bin Laden, that they don't, they're not going to try to raise too much awareness because that just bought him a re-election. And, right.
So we're going to bury
show,
it. Let's bury
yeah, they're going to bury yeah, the and, information.
And we got elected on partisanship mm-hmm. and working together. Or the yeah. first thing we can't do. The first thing is point fingers. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's interesting when they talk about how did they get away with this? How did they get the approval, the access, the rights to do these horrible things? And it's like, well, you find out Bush didn't know, yeah. Colin Powell didn't know,
right?
And it's like the people in charge that should know did not know
yeah.
for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like,
And when they were finally told, they weren't necessarily told everything. Decisions in the wrong room that never went up the proper chain of commands.
Right. And then, so it's an interesting different look at the way government works. It was very interesting to see this kind of thing. And then it had the feel of All the President's Men to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I made that that connection in my mind as I was watching it as well, and finding it how interesting is it that you have a situation so many years apart that has the same type of feel, like the same type of thing could continually happen, and they remark on that yeah. too in the movie.
Why do we repeat the past? Because maybe we didn't learn from them.
Right, we didn't listen the first time.
Yep.
No, I also think it's interesting that, you look at scandals as far as things go, where the government lies to us, and then mm-hmm. we go, "What? Excuse us? What happened?"
Mm-hmm.
Watergate being one of those instances from All the President's Men, it's from the movie. Didn't really happen, but you know how united the country got about that. Yeah, mm-hmm. the big wake up call of, "Whoa! What are you guys doing? You're not supposed to be doing that." And then nowadays, where the report comes out, and there is kind of a, oh, I can't, and then we just all move on. Yeah. And how that didn't have the weight that it did.
Well, and the amount of information there is now available at your fingertips, there's going to be something else that's going to cloud it.
Yep.
Not only
bury the
lead. Next day, but in the next
minutes.
Hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Minutes later, they bury the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also gaslighting.
I have, right. Well, I have, I subscribe to Washington Post. And so I get probably, 3 to 4 push notifications from them a day.
You become desensitized.
Yeah. Now, what would be interesting is if I had this for more than the last year, if that's typical. If, you know, prior to 2016, that would happen.
The 24-hour news cycle was a lot of, are there cats in your escalator?
Yeah. Are there cats in your... That's creepy.
Well, no, I mean, just a lot of the, you know, is your cat killing you?
Yeah.
Does the escalator kill you?
Yeah. Has your goldfish turned into a crocodile?
Right. A lot of crazy news.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you look at Michael Moore's film, Bowling for Columbine, where he talks about the news being pretty much a symptom or maybe a virus, not sure, of the fear of our neighbors and how Canada, like, breaking news downtown, new speed bumps. Wow, I wish our news was that exciting. I really wish it wasn't that exciting. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Right.
Dull local news would be wonderful. It would probably calm a lot of people
down. Is there
a
place on Earth called Mayberry, or is it a fictitious, like, town? Like, I know it is, but, like, is there a real Mayberry out there?
I'm sure. Somewhere.
People are searching for it. Back to torture. Oh, okay. Wow. So, very few, besides me talking, thank you. Very few of the, are there light moments, I guess, in this film where you could go, huh? And to me, one of them was the first instance that you have the first detainee before he becomes a detainee, when he's first arrested and the FBI has him and they're trying to build a rapport with him. And so it's like the first time you see somebody and you're like, oh, is it going to be tortured or not? Oh my God. And they're giving him medical assistance and they're talking to him. And it's not like, you know, a 4-star hotel stay, but it looks like we're treating him very humanely.
Right.
And then the first thing that they, like, they, can I get you a Pepsi? And I'm like, oh, did Coke finance this film? Is this the first moment of torture, offering the man a Pepsi? Like, seriously, who does that? Doesn't Coke own everything?
That was actually where it all started, right there. They got the whole idea of torturing them just from that one.
Yeah, it's like, Pepsi? Oh, no. Is Pepsi okay? So another thing is, when you talk about doing a, based on actual events, storyline, the good news is you kind of have the story already built for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to make it intense. And this one covered, what, 6 years?
Yeah.
And to kind of keep track of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how they did that with the pacing. The idea of trying to keep that interesting. And then there's just so much details that it's all paperwork and trying to make mm-hmm. those faces be people.
Mm-hmm.
And how much torture do you implement in for the audience to see. And right. I think that was very important, that they show some of it, not to horrify us, not gratuitously, but to make, because if you just talk about it, the gravity of it won't be there.
Yeah.
You have to see human beings suffering to go, oh my God, human beings are suffering.
Yeah. Right. Now I'm trying to recall, because the biggest situation that happens is that he gets his hands on the CIA's internal report.
Yeah, something gets sent to him accidentally.
And that's right. So, and then they think that he got...
They talk about how it's like, it was an accident or was a whistleblower. We don't know if somebody sent it or it was an accident.
Yeah, Dan was discussing with Feinstein mm-hmm. whether or not, he's like, I don't know how it ended up in the pile, because they had already... The CIA was also going...
They were vetting
the stuff before sending it to him, which is...
Somebody dumped this.
Yeah, so then the question becomes, you know, and we don't know in the film whether or not it was a whistleblower or somebody screwed up and sent it to him. Right. But he gets blamed for hacking the CIA to get that information.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah, when he could not have done that if he tried, apparently.
Right, he does not... Yeah.
Yeah, he said. I think he jokes that his computer skills stop beyond Microsoft Word.
Another thing is, I mean, nobody at the podcast here tonight has read the book. We've all just seen the movie, right?
Correct.
I think it's another interesting choice. A lot of films like this, or like the other one I would think of besides All the President's Men is the JFK one with Kevin Costner. Is that the Oliver Stone movie?
Yeah, yes. JFK.
JFK.
Yeah.
There you go, where you're following a lot of historical facts and instances. But in this case, like, because you're getting one person's point of view, that's your gateway into it,
Your narrative is right. biased to that person's perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. I find it very interesting. They kept his personal life out of it.
Mm-hmm.
No friends, no family,
nothing. Yeah, he didn't have a personal life, according to the story.
Yeah, that's right. Also true.
But the fact that it is all really about the report,
mm-hmm.
even though, you know, there are a lot of instances where you have the reporter or you have the investigator and then their life and how it's affected by, but this is strictly about the actual report.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's written, the book, the material comes from the gentleman who wrote the report. So it's interesting that he didn't put anything like that forward, or that the director didn't, that they mm-hmm. made it all about the report itself.
At some point that was a decision, regardless of whether or not it wasn't in the book at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a decision to also not include that in the script, or to add that into the script to furthermore humanize him and mm-hmm. make him more relatable. Instead, I liked the other direction, full out workaholic.
Yeah.
And that exchange where, you know, he doesn't even realize how soon Thanksgiving is.
Yes.
Mm.
Well, he has no idea what month.
That's it next is. Week.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the fact that in the beginning he's told, you know, you gotta stay calm, you gotta stay detached, you can't get emotional, and then you watch him get more and more, and to a point where, who do you work for? Do you work for the reporter or do you work for me?
Right.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Get back to me. Because he gets very challenging. And I do think it's very interesting that, and I would be interested to know if this was for the purpose of the film, or if this is something that he really considered doing, was the talking to the reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah.
And then deciding to trust
that it would come out correctly.
That they would do the right thing, that they would be able to do the right thing.
That's actually the scene, I think, that made me think so much about All the President's Men. Was it's like you have this opportunity to connect with the press, to get this out in the public. But we've seen in the past that this doesn't play out right.
Yeah.
And so he has this big moment where he's got to decide which route is he going to take. And a lot of that, I think, is driven by obviously his frustration, but his, can I see this through? Because yeah. I don't know if it'll ever see the light of day. Mm-hmm. At this point,
you don't have it's not an information problem, it's a sunlight problem.
The sprinklings of comedy.
Yeah. Right.
It's funny, the, what was it, like a PBS NewsHour thing that we mm-hmm. watched, how the...
You were putting the children to bed.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, I assumed... Yeah,
this is what we do behind your back. We watch PBS.
Dick moves, Santa.
It was an interview with the director, the writer director, and the real guy, the guy that wrote the book.
Oh, okay.
Dan Jones.
And so he makes the comment, which I was a little surprised by, where he's like, when I first read it, I interpreted it as a dark comedy.
Oh, comedy of errors. He said it was a dark comedy of errors. And he's like, and it kind of felt like, not at the moment, like in it, didn't feel like it, but looking back, yeah, kind of was that.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was very jarred by that, because I was like, oh, I wouldn't put comedy anywhere near this movie.
But well, yeah, but like
people just continuously bumbling over themselves.
Well, yeah, and the fact that when you see that much incompetence, incompetence, it's just misstep and mistake and wrong mm-hmm. interpretation over and over and over in like a series, you're like, this is ridiculous.
Knowing full well that you should not, the CIA should not go into that room. It is sealed by the Senate. You are breaking
And that's
the
like
power what, struggle that is.
That's the moment in the PBS special where he was like, and we're like, that's a movie. Like, people don't do that. That's not real. It's like a movie.
Yeah.
But no, if it was a movie, Tom Cruise would have come in from the ceiling.
It's true. He would have.
They would have.
I just want to know why.
Contractor. They would have gotten him an independent contractor.
Why is there a rat inside the vent? That has always bothered me.
Right? How dirty was
I
the
completely forgot about.
Why is there a rat in the vent? It just doesn't sound right.
No.
Doesn't sound
Not
like,
to mention, why did you have to kill it? But no, like, why
no.
did you have to kill it?
To kill it? No, Ratatouille. For the insult to Ratatouille.
He is no chef.
Bruce Willis went through several vents and in a no high story building, no rats.
Right.
He knows what a TV dinner feels like, though.
And it was not rat infested. Thank God.
Christmas movie.
It's a good Christmas movie. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. One of my favorites.
Also a good Christmas movie.
Sorry. Or Guns and Christmas. I just, leaped to the other one. Anyway.
Yeah.
Is this our Christmas movie? Because that would be so sad.
No.
No.
No, I think that ship has sailed. we're going to take a few more minutes to fill our glasses with another senator and get ready to imbibe more after this.
Hey there, listener. This is Michael with Imbibe Cinema and the Blue Whiskey Independent Film Festival. Did you know that Imbibe Cinema isn't just a podcast? We've also got a variety of articles and reviews available to read on our website, plus a streaming membership that gives you access to a new batch of independent films every month. Become an Imbibe Cinema member today at watch.imbibecinema.com. That's watch.imbibecinema.com. Thanks for supporting and imbibing the various content we offer. Now, back to the show.
Are we back?
We could be back.
You're listening to Imbibe Cinema. I'm Jonathan C. Leggett. I'm here along with
Michael Nguyen's
Trisha Leggett.
Trisha's eating what?
I'm butterscotching it up because I'm an old lady. But I took the wrapper off first. Hey.
And we are discussing The Report. Enjoying our podcast? Enjoying the old lady? Please subscribe or follow us at all your favorite podcast providers to get new episodes as soon as we release them, which is every fortnight.
Hey.
Rate or leave us a review to help our show reach a larger audience. Or you can also follow us on Imbibe Cinema on Facebook and the Twitters. So before the break, we had been talking about story, but I really think that we need to talk about this exceptional cast and crew. Adam Driver, I would watch him eat a bowl of cereal. I think I said this on a previous podcast too.
About somebody else eating a bowl of cereal.
Also eating a bowl of cereal. What is it with me watching people eat bowls of cereal?
But I'm trying to remember. That's where my mind immediately went. Was who else? Can Dude,
I
want to
watch eating
a
bowl of
cereal. But
people have their fantasy like dinner party where like what famous people would you invite? We all know they're having cereal.
Yes. Well, I mean, if I'm gonna have a dinner party with these people, like I could do a whole five course meal, but I'd be having to cook,
right?
And I'd much rather have a conversation with these people. So just bowl of cereal, milk. Let's talk. Screw the cooking. That fuck that nonsense.
Just cater it, dude.
Oh,
cater cereal? I don't understand. Yeah. It just seems like a waste of money.
Wait there. Can you get my Captain Crunch?
So Adam Driver, fantastic. Physically, he is locked into a particular look because of Star Wars. And so he has, his hair is a longer length.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has a very, very specific look that he's locked into because of that. And so watching him in this, and I know you guys haven't seen Marriage Story yet, but seeing him in that, and then knowing, hey, this is also the appearance of his look as Kylo Ren, totally, completely different characters.
Physicality.
And you buy in the entire time. Like, you're just throwing a suit on him in one, a sweater on in another, and then,
Kylo Ren. Yeah.
But, it's just interesting to me because you see more often than not, an actor will kind of transform themselves into more of this particular type of character. Mm-hmm. And there, it's not like he's wearing glasses or anything yep. like that. It's just
intensity, physicality.
It's just him. And, wildly different characters and
it's military training,
remarkable, just a remarkable performance in all of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think, after seeing both of them, I was like, he could be nominated for best actor for both
any
of these films.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I always love watching John Hamm, especially, in those instances where he's not being, funny. John Hamm in this, obviously more akin to his madman character, than possibly like, I don't know, Tag, where he,
yeah,
I love being able to say that. That was actually an okay movie.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The whole cast actually, a number of them aren't, you know, necessarily big names that would headline a movie. It's one of those, I mean, being drawn more to independent films,
mm-hmm.
each and every one of them, Corey Stoll.
Yep.
Annette Bening.
Yep.
Michael C. Hall.
Yep.
They all, you know, I was like, oh, wow, this is just such a great lineup.
Now, the two gentlemen that played the psychologists.
T. Ryder Smith and Douglas Hodge.
Or as
I put on my little notes here, D-bag number one and D-bag number two.
Yes.
Yes.
Because they did an amazing job of making you hate them. Just, yeah. Oh, my God. And the one guy talking about himself in the third person, you're like, how did anybody think this was a good idea to get this guy,
yeah.
like, any
James,
level of power?
James woke up after 9/11. James said, it's like, this would have been red flag number one to me. James needs to stop talking about James in the third person because you are not somebody I want torturing somebody. Enhanced interrogation.
No, yeah. The director, Scott, in PBS interview, they say that, they ask about what drew him to making this movie. And he said that he grew up with two parents who were both psychologists, therapists in that genre.
I don't remember.
And he grew up at a young age knowing about this profession and about, you know, that it's used to help people. And then when he read about these two men using it to weaponize something that's meant to help people, he was drawn in by that. He couldn't believe how horrific that is, that anybody would do that. And that was the starting off point. And they really are, to me, the villains of the piece. When you watch mm-hmm. the report, I can understand where everybody is coming from. I even almost understand where they're coming from. But I still think, like,
oh, no.
They're evil.
Yeah, they are.
And then
they were
like $80 million they got paid
oh, yeah.
to, like, destroy people.
A force
of them, which
jet.
Were never supposed to be detained. Nobody, I mean, we could go on and on about how horrible it was and what they did was inexcusable, unforgivable, all this kind of stuff. And then we just, you know, let them go with lots of money.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're fine.
The only question that I'm left asking about those two characters is how they got introduced to the top brass at the CIA.
How they got in that room.
How they got in that room. Because I understand, like, the pitch that they made. But I want to know who was like, oh,
Michael
I
C.
heard
Hall's
a pitch.
Michael C. Hall's character introduced them.
Well, he introduced
said,
them.
He said, so-and-so said they had the special sauce. She okay. was impressed by them. And then they're like, well, get them in
okay.
here. And I get, you have nowhere to go. You have, like, your training is not brought you to...
Chicken with heads cut off.
We had
right
no
after
idea.
9/11,
we have no idea what to do.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump on the first, but I mean, God, those people.
Research.
I love how they keep saying, the entire film, they keep saying, well, the science behind it. There's no fucking science behind it.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yes.
Yeah.
That they were put in such a position where they had so much power and it was unchecked. And yeah. that nobody really supervised or went, you know what? You guys aren't qualified to do that. Or just. The entire thing. It's horrendous.
Well, the fact that it went on so long without results.
That it even was introduced as being okay or an idea that we should do, considering they tried it in Vietnam. They tried it, and every time you torture people, it doesn't work.
We don't learn from our
And by
history.
The way, hey, you know who's famous for doing this? The Nazis. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of company you want to keep?
So I love how this film was shot. He was the cinematographer for In Bruges.
Oh.
Beautifully shot. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
As well as The Wizard of Lies, which was a television movie, as well as Ocean's 8.
Yes. Yeah.
And so he did a great job of keeping the suspense, of keeping everything just really... From a lighting perspective, it was very intense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was.
Well, and the music as well.
It was gritty. Yes. It had a gritty feel to it.
How was the hook? Did you have a hook moment?
Oh.
I know we started at the beginning. The beginning in the middle, right? Because he's talking to the lawyer in the beginning
almost,
of the
no,
film.
No, almost the end. It's was almost it the home? End. And then he's like, because that's where he's already being called out. And it's right. Just about before he goes to the reporter.
Who happens to be the same reporter from Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Yeah.
Oh. I was looking this up. Sorry. It was shot on an Arri Alexa Mini.
Oh.
Which is not a film.
Oh my God. That is such a tiny camera.
It's an Alexa Mini.
Alexa.
Not Alexa. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so now I can hear you
Arri
too.
Alexa Mini.
Great. Alexa, start recording.
Action.
I don't.
Alexa.
I don't...
Say action.
Alexa, give me playback. Yeah, Alexa, check the gate.
I can't, I can't remember a particular hook moment for me. I mean, I was excited to see this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because of the subject matter, but because of the cast, because of how compelling the trailer was cut together. And my mind went to All the President's Men, Spotlight, those kind of movies. And I've had like this desire to see more movies like that, with that like almost like Aaron Sorkin style dialogue, where it is it's wordy, but it's very like driven, like. Mm-hmm. Every word that's coming out of each character's mouth is propelling the story forward. Yeah. We're not just bantering. We're not Tarantino bantering right now. And as enjoyable as that is. I think that is what really kind of pulled me in. And that's why I was like, you know what? I have an opportunity to see this movie in the theater. I have to go.
Right.
So,
well, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know that you had wanted this on the list after you had seen it. You wanted Trisha and I to see it as soon as it came out on Amazon. And I remember you specifically saying something about the very end for you that really did something. And I wanted
It was the scene. It wasn't necessarily the very end, but it was towards the end of the film. It's the scene where listening to McCain.
Yeah.
That was something I wanted to talk about.
It was just beautifully done.
Yeah.
The way that they incorporated that into the film.
Yeah.
I was like, you know what? I don't want to say anything about it because I don't want to affect that moment as you're watching.
But no, I know.
That was interesting because you have historic figures played by actors in the film.
Yeah.
One of the things I think it's hard to do when you have a historical based on actual events kind of story that you were telling is not to have a biased point of view, mm-hmm. especially a political point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that, and I'm one of those people that's hypersensitive to that. I'm always looking for it
mm-hmm.
because I don't want to be taken for a ride and not know who the driver is in a way. Right. I want to be like, I can agree with you or disagree with you, but I know. So well played. I want to.
Trisha was like,
"Don't
say Adam. Don't say Adam. Don't say Adam."
I'm on
it's
all
Adam.
Of these tonight.
Yes. Any hoozles. So what I'm trying to say is, I think it's very interesting that yes, there are viewpoints, but there is no "we are better than you are" kind of moment
right.
in the film at all.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the only time in which I see the filmmaker truly having a statement about any political figure in our recent history is that moment. Because, you know, we have Feinstein, she's fine. And you have Obama, you have Bush, you have Cheney, mm-hmm. you have all these huge figures throughout the course of these many years. And this is the only moment where it's kind of like, it's almost, this is a national hero, and we're going to have this moment where we just step back and let him talk, because nothing could, it didn't seem like there's this moment we're just going to stop and mm-hmm. take a breath and just, mm-hmm.
And again, of all of the poignant people to have be the second or the co-signer of that bill, it's a POW.
A man who's been tortured, yes. Mm-hmm.
Who had an opportunity to come home because his father was,
and he said without
of importance,
he wouldn't leave them behind.
I mean, like, you know, I know some people after McCain passed had all sorts of weird things that they had. That man was easily one of the last
great statesmen
that this country has ever had.
Yes.
Hopefully not the last, but right now we're definitely in a turf war of turf wars, mm-hmm. Between two political parties.
We're in one of the off years.
But I mean, it was absolutely beautiful. And I figured that was the scene that I really wanted to confirm.
Yeah.
Listening to John.
It was not only a pivotal point, I feel, in the story, which is why we kind of take this moment, but also it's like we ever so slightly stepped into a moment where we're just kind of, instead of having an actor play him, we're just honoring him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Through this speech.
Yes.
And I just thought, I thought it was a beautiful moment.
And it was apparent, I think, and I don't know how it is, but it's like the editing in a film, the way we were trained, it's like grammar. Editing is grammar, right? And so it will lead us down all kinds of paths where we'll see one thing and see another, and then we'll draw the conclusion that we're meant to draw. And just the lead in before he speaks, you know, it felt like they were just the whole production was stepping back.
Yep.
And going, okay,
now the senator from Arizona.
And now we're gonna have this. It was so intense, just the brief moment before he speaks, that you're kind of like, whoa, I just got taken out of the movie for reality for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay. Let's take a look at a few rotten reviews of this movie and what some critics have
said.
Please
tell me there's a few of them. Like, very few of them.
So, RogerEbert.com.
He's like, dead,
this is real weird that he's reviewing it.
From beyond the grave.
RogerEbert.com says, "It's an unimpeachable cast doing solid work with weighty material. If only the film as a whole weren't so deadly dull."
Which is so funny, because it's a film about torture. But evidently, so the only torture is that review. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Damn.
Sorry.
I didn't see that tree sprout, but look, there's a whole shit ton of shade now.
It's because I'm sorry. Go ahead. Next.
Next. Arizona Republic says, "If only anything committed to screen here were memorable."
Damn. Okay, wow.
All right, well, final one here from Film Spotting. "For a movie that takes such a clinical and cynical approach, the swelling strings underlying the oratory coming from the floor of the Senate feels false."
They have a thesaurus they like to use. Don't you tell?
So they're like, "This movie was great, but then they put violins under John McCain. They don't know what they're doing." It's like, what the fuck?
No, yeah. This is somebody whose poetry is not taking off the way they want it. And
the swelling strings
underlying the oratory.
I give all of these critics credit. Because it's hard to say you don't like something creatively and new every single time.
In something that would score high on a Scrabble board.
Right? Again, thesaurus. If you can't enjoy a good story without, you know, going through with a red pen, mm-hmm. that's, You're missing out on a good story.
Well, and that's my feeling with a movie like John Carter, a movie that most critics hated. And I understand why they didn't like the movie. I get it. But I choose to see what Andrew Stanton was trying to do with this movie and the cool story that he was telling. And he did so many things right with it. But there were like so many little threads that critics were like, well, I'm going to pull on that and I'm going to pull on that, and just undid the whole movie instead of just
enjoying it for what
enjoying
it was.
The movie.
So that to me is the Indiana Jones for I'm here to enjoy a summer movie. This is not an Indiana Jones movie. And I was able to enjoy it. We greatly appreciate all of our listeners for choosing this podcast and for supporting independent films in general. Keep an ear out for our next episode to check out our show notes or to just drop us a note. Please visit us at imbibescinema.com. Once again, I am Jonathan C. Leggett, and thanks again for imbibing with us. Cheers.